I am a stranger, and I'm lonely all alone. And would you kindly tell me where I'd find that little Blarney Stone? This Blarney Stone.
There are giants in the sky. There are big, tall, terrible giants in the sky. And you look below at the world you've left, and I think you know little more than a glance is enough to show you just how small you are.
Standing on the shoulders of giants is a phrase immortalized by one of the most influential scientists of all time, Isaac Newton, in a letter to his rival Robert Hooke in 1676. Newton didn't originate it, though. The credit actually goes to the 12th century theologian and author John of Salisbury, who wrote that sitting on the shoulders of giants, we see more. Not because our sight is superior or because we are taller than they, but because they raise us up and by their great stature add to ours. According to the 2018 Global Competitiveness Report, Ireland currently sits in 24th place out of 140 countries for spending in the area of research and development as a percentage of gross domestic product, or GDP. At any one time, it's estimated that there are about 7,000 full-time students here researching on PhD programmes, with a further 1,000 engaged in researching masters. I think it's safe to say that each and every one of them are standing on the shoulders of giants. Using the understanding gained by major thinkers from the past to make intellectual progress into the future. In our new mini-series, On the Shoulders of Giants, with Mooneygoes Wild biologist Terry Flanagan, we look at some of this groundbreaking research. Amy Gray is currently doing a PhD on windchats in the UCD School of Agriculture and Food Science. The windchat is a small bird which winters in Africa and arrives in Ireland in early summer. The numbers have been dropping recently, and there are only about 200 pairs left here. Amy's research is funded by the Irish Research Council, and she's been working on her thesis on the Shannon Callows since 2016.
Now we can see the male over there perching on a bit of meadowsweet.
Yeah, I see him. Quite a small bird, isn't he?
He's very small, very similar in size to a robin, actually, but more of a kind of a buff orange breast towards the top and a very white belly. They're also very distinctive as well because of the white eye stripe that they have on the side. So that kind of distinguishes them. And you can even see this starting to appear in the fledglings as well, which are the baby birds. So it's quite easy to detect the baby birds. You can see their white eye stripe, and they make a very similar sound to their parents, attacking kind of noise with a bit of a whistle.
Now, it's the whinchat we're looking at. And if we start by looking at the name, whinchat, everyone in Ireland knows that whin is another word for gorse or furze. And this place, there's quite a lot of it around. And I presume the chat comes from the sound of them, because that's what they're doing now, chatting.
Exactly, they are chatting. They're making lots of noise. The chat is their alarm call, and this is what you will hear in the breeding season. So you might hear it a little bit in the winter time, but it's much more effective when they are trying to protect their young from predators. They would perceive us as predators, so they would be making lots of noise in order to encourage the baby birds to hide in the vegetation and to stay out of danger.
Now, we're not actually anywhere near to them. We must be about 100 metres away, so they're quite quiet. They're not going crazy.
Yes, exactly. If we got any closer, I'm sure they'd be getting very upset and probably moving further away from the nest and leaving their chicks to fend for themselves for a few minutes, so we want to stay quite far away.
And there is a nest here?
There is a nest just over that direction in some kind of shrubby vegetation. There's lots of meadowsweet, bits of thistle, there's some nettle in the area. So this pair are actually extremely lucky that they have chosen to build their nest in an area that won't be mown by a landowner.
Because we are on the Shannon Callows. We're what, 50 metres, less, 30 metres away from the Shannon itself. And this floods this area, is that right?
It does indeed. So in the wintertime, this entire area will be completely impassable. We're actually on an island, so all of this area here completely flooded in the wintertime, and the water only begins to kind of recede in about April. And these birds have quite a haven here in the summertime because the waters recede and there's lovely grassy kind of vegetation that comes up, and they can use this. It can be quite dense, and they use that to build their nests.
Right, well, tell us a little bit then about your thesis.
It's a conservation project at the root of it. So I am looking at the whinchat. I'm trying to assess what kind of timeline they use during the breeding season. So when they arrive in the summer, they're an African migrant. They come over. They arrive usually at the end of April, beginning of May. And then the males arrive first and the females arrive a little bit later after this. And they pair up. And the female begins to build a nest. And
which is on the ground, I believe.
Exactly. So ground nesters are very interesting. They nest on the ground rather than in a tree. And they are able to make kind of cupped nests in the ground. Particularly the whinchat makes its nest out of moss and other softer materials. They make a nice deep cup, which they will lay around 5 to 7 eggs in. And the female will incubate these eggs or sit on the eggs for up to 2 weeks. After this, the chicks will presumably hatch as long as they haven't been affected by any kind of predation or poor weather conditions. Once they hatch, the pair, they feed the chicks for the next around 17 to 19 days. And after this point, the fledglings or the baby birds are, in theory, at the right age to kind of leave the nest. They'll leave the nest on foot. And then, of course, once they've left the nest on foot, they've got to begin to learn how to fly. And they will be observing their parents in order to achieve this. But even after they have fledged and left the nest and are able to fly, the adults will continue to feed them for a significant period. And they feed them insects. So that would be their main prey source, especially in the summer.
Do they have a second or a third clutch?
They don't have a second or a third clutch. Not
Unlike, say, blue tits or that.
Exactly. No, just they're single brooded, which is what we would call this species. They only have one clutch. Occasionally, the clutch might fail, and this could be due to a number of reasons, such as predation or any kind of...
Well, I suppose being on the ground, the likes of foxes, and we saw some fox poo there just a moment ago.
We did indeed.
So they are here.
Yes, they would be predated by foxes or also corvids, which are kind
crows.
Of the crow family.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And how many territories have you come across here on the Callows?
Across the Callows, my fieldwork sites are from Banher, the area that we're in now, up as far as Athlone, and I have found up to 62 pairs or territories. Of this, I've been able to successfully monitor for a long period of time up to 50 of these pairs.
That's very good, because they are in trouble numbers-wise.
They are indeed. So back in the 1990s in Ireland, we thought we had, you know, a couple of thousand, whereas now the estimates are around 200 pairs across
what's
Ireland.
What's the problem? Why are the numbers dropping?
Across Europe, definitely one of the most pertinent issues is the mowing of grasslands and the intensification of agriculture. On the Callows here in particular, I'm trying to investigate what is the main cause for the drop in the population numbers. But one of the main reasons, again, is the mowing of grasslands. So you can see where we are now. This was a lovely meadow that could have had vegetation up to a metre high. And now you can see we're just left to some stubble here on the ground. And it can be quite a challenge, even if the birds are to survive the mowing, for them to then find prey, which would be kind of winged insects that would be spending time in meadows, and also any kind of ground invertebrates that they might find on exposed land. I am very fortunate that I've been funded by the Irish Research Council to do this project and to carry this out for the next 2 years.
And you're also working through UCD, is that right?
Exactly. So I am doing a PhD, which is based in the UCD School of Agriculture and Food Science in UCD.
Okay, tell us what you've found out in the last year or two.
So what I found out in the last year or two is that it's very important to have decent weather in the springtime. Of course, these birds are...
This is for the birds and not for the researchers.
For the birds, exactly. So this species, they are migratory. They come over from Africa. They've got to make a huge, incredible journey in order to make it here. And if you have poor wet weather in the springtime, it becomes very difficult for them to actually make their full migration.
And what have your findings been so far?
The findings so far have been that definitely the whinchat are in trouble, for sure. Their populations are decreasing. So the main kind of components for this research project are to monitor the species throughout the breeding season to assess when the baby birds are actually flying, when they're able to avoid any kind of mowing machine coming in. You don't want them to hide in the vegetation, which is what very young baby birds will do.
Would you hope to be able to put forward some kind of suggestions after spending 3 or 4 years here as to how you could help them in this particular area here in Ireland?
Absolutely. That's one of the key aims for my research project. So collecting as much information as I can about the species. What are their requirements? When exactly do they fledge, and when are they most vulnerable? So when I find out this information, I can then make recommendations for conservation for the species. But at the same time, you can look at just the species and you can look at their particular requirements, and unfortunately, what can happen is you kind of forget about the human element. You forget about the people that are working the land. So it's very important to communicate with them as well. And that's another part of my project as well, the social component. Looking at the rural life, working with farmers, learn more about their knowledge and what they know, because they know a lot. They spend almost every day out here. So talking to them, see what they're willing to do, see if we can work together, is a huge important part of my project, kind of this working together to figure out what can we do for the species, because birds, like all wildlife, are important for everyone.
And you're not alone today. I see your supervisors here, Dr. Alex Copeland. What's he at now?
He is at the moment putting out some traps to hopefully be able to humanely and very safely catch some of our windchat. He's put perch traps up that will hopefully catch an adult if they are attracted to the area. And he also has some spring traps that he is putting on the ground that might attract a fledgling, which is a baby bird.
Okay, well, let's go down and see if he's anyway successful. Okay, let's move on.
Oh, yeah, I think he has one.
Alex, you've got a bird in the hand.
I do, Terry, yes.
It is a whinchat.
It's a male whinchat, yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's tiny, is the first thing I'd say. I thought you said it was the size of a robin. It's a little smaller than a robin, I think, is it?
A wee bit smaller, yeah. But not much.
Okay, and you're going to ring this bird now.
I am. I'm going to chuck on a small metal ring. These little metal rings, they have a unique number on them, so because this bird, particularly valuable because this bird's a long-distance migrant, it means wherever it gets found, we'll be able to trace it back to here, when it was ringed here today.
Their feet, they're absolutely tiny, aren't they?
They're incredibly delicate. It's, you know, to be a ringer is, it takes years and years of training and experience to be able to handle some of these really small birds.
And the ring, it is so tiny.
It is. I mean, it has to be very small. I mean, you want them to be as small as possible so it's not hindering the birds. So, yeah. And they're made of aluminium, so they're very light. I mean, this is, it's a tiny fraction of the bird's weight. It's a bit like us wearing a wristwatch. So it doesn't impair them at all.
And that bird now will go back to Africa?
Hope so. We know it's probably feeding fairly big chicks in the nest at the moment. Once they've fledged, it'll hopefully be heading back off south again, maybe in August or September, back to wintering grounds in sub-Saharan Africa.
So you can't keep this in the hand for too long?
No,
you're taking away, so...
It's feeding chicks, so we want it to be getting back to feeding its young as soon as we possibly can.
So you're just noting the ring number now?
So the ring number, the species, obviously, we need to note its age, how old it is. What's interesting about this bird is it's actually in molt at the moment. You can see the feathers there, the primary flight feathers. You see these ones that are growing.
I see it. It's small. It's only about half the size.
It is. And you'll notice that it's exactly the same on the other wing as well. That
these
feathers
are
symmetric. Otherwise, the bird would fly in circles.
Right, okay. Do you know the one thing I noticed most particularly is that white line just across the eye?
The supercilium. Technical term, Terry, is a supercilium, that white stripe above the eye. Yeah, it's very noticeable. The other thing that you'll notice about them in the field is you see the white marks in the wing, the white bars in the wing, and also the white on the outer tail feathers.
That's not the white rump.
No, white rump, but the central tail feathers are dark. The tail feather tips are dark, but it has these white feathers here. And when you see it fly and these open up, you see it flying away from you. And you see these two little white windows as the bird flies away from you.
Yeah.
So it's quite distinctive.
You can just
see little touch, not too much in this bird now. It's not very bright, but the little touch of sort of rusty coloured feathers.
And of course, that's where the Latin name comes from too as well, isn't it? And it's very similar to the stonechat.
It is. Oh, they're very, very similar to stonechat. They're very closely related to stonechat.
What's your worries then for the whinchat in Ireland or in general?
The worry is that the population is in decline, and it's in decline across the whole of Europe. And they're just not doing very well. It's a species that's struggling to survive in modern, probably intensive agricultural landscapes. It's also a species that is perhaps being affected by climate change. There's a suspicion that part of the reason that they're doing so badly is because they're struggling on migration to find food and sort of stopover points when they're on passage, particularly in the autumn. So it's a species that could be affected by a number of different things. That's the problem with these long-distance migrants, is that they can be affected by a number of different conservation issues or environmental threats to them. So there's an awful lot going on or going against these poor little birds.
And I suppose the research that Amy is doing is of the utmost importance in trying to help these birds.
Absolutely essential, yeah. You know, it's really, really important. It's fantastic to have this work being done. I mean, whinchat was a species. It's always scarce in Ireland, but we didn't realise just how badly they were doing until the recent bird atlas, which showed that the population had declined massively in the last sort of 20 years.
Yeah.
Now it's gone on to the red list in Ireland. The declines have been so great. Yeah, very sad. So the Callows here, I'm sure, as Amy was saying, is very, very important for them. I mean, it's over half the national population is now on the Callows here. So trying to do something for them here is going to be essential to try and keep them in Ireland as an Irish breeding bird.
OK, well, look, I won't delay any longer because I know you want to get that little birdie back out to his family.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you, Terry. More from Terry Flanagan on the shoulders of giants next week. That's all we have time for today. My thanks to all of our contributors, Aina Nilana and Richard Collins. Our researcher is John Riley and the series producer is Anna Leddy. Until next time, goodbye.
And Mooney Goes Wild is presented by Derek Mooney.